Wow, it is such a pleasure to be back here in this sanctuary. And I just want to say how sweet it is to hear in the announcements that the post office is allowing parking, even when the sign says don't park. I consider that huge progress. Well, happy Pride Month, everyone. As we begin the sermon this morning, I would just like to be perfectly clear that I am not a member of the LGBTQ plus community. And for those who need a quick briefing, the acronym LGBTQ plus stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, with that plus sign added for good measure. And the plus represents other possible orientations, such as questioning or intersex or asexual. A friend of mine recently told me that his daughter came out as asexual, which I thought was fascinating. So sometimes the acronym appears as LGBTQQIA+, acronym ever growing, I know. And although that acronym keeps getting longer and longer with more letters, I think we as Unitarian Universalists should feel a deep resonance with that inclination towards more inclusion, ever more inclusion, radical inclusion. Now, this religion that we practice contains the word embedded within it, universalist, meaning everyone. So it makes perfect sense that we, as Unitarian Universalists, be lovingly curious and enthusiastically supportive of that plus sign, indicating positive welcoming, so that ever more people are invited in to create safety in community, to acknowledge lived experience, and to listen to stories. And this little blurb from the website called Bustle. Quote, while the plus in LGBTQQIA+ may represent other sexual identities, such as pansexual, gender fluid, queer, bi curious, and so many more, it's also a wider signifier of inclusion and acceptance of all experiences. And that's a key phrase for Unitarian Universalists, a wider signifier of inclusion and acceptance for all experiences. Now, maybe we should consider adding the plus sign to Unitarian Universalism. We could be UU plus, or perhaps on our better days, UU is already a plus sign among religions. And again, to be perfectly, absolutely clear, as blunt as a concrete block, I am a cisgender heterosexual male who has been happily married to a cisgender heterosexual female for nearly 30 years. And for those who need a briefing on cisgender, it just simply means that your gender matches the sex that you were assigned at birth. So when I was born, for example, the doctor saw penis, wrote male on the birth certificate, and I grew up a boy who became a man, and I never thought twice about my gender identity as male. This is a textbook example of cisgender. Also, as a textbook example of gendered social roles, the doctor I mentioned in that little vignette happened to be a woman. And my guess is that many of us unconsciously thought of a male when I said the word doctor. Just saying. Back to the main point. It is not always the case that someone's sex that they were assigned at birth matches their gender, and thus the T in LGBTQ plus, transgender. Now, those people who identify differs from the sex that they were born with, and there's about 1.4 million adults in the United States who proudly identify as transgender, including two young adults in my neighborhood and numerous trans folks in the UU congregations that I speak with in the Salish Sea region. Now, this short preamble is all to say that I recognize that I cannot speak for the LGBTQ plus community. I can only speak for myself as an ally. The A for ally is also sometimes included in that string of letters to create LGBTQQIAA+. And I call myself an ally for many reasons, but mostly because I have a 20-something-year-old daughter who proudly populates the Q portion of that acronym. Now, she grew up in a UU congregation and quote-unquote came out when she was in her first year of college. And to celebrate Pride Month, I asked her permission to tell parts of her story from my perspective about her coming out. And she agreed, and she wished me luck. So I would first like to say that my daughter's partner wears a hat with a message embroidered on the front, which reads, "Everybody's gay." So happy Pride Month. Everybody's gay. Now, to set the stage, when I was coming of age in the 1970s and 80s in this shrinking Rust Belt community, there was the standard run-of-the-mill homophobia that most of us are familiar with. Playground games called Smear the Queer, the F-word and homo used without regard as common and effective tear-jerking slurs. There was also a very mysterious and deadly disease manifesting among homosexual men. The one gay bar in town, Big Mike's, looked pretty seedy. And the quote-unquote AC/DC bar, Mother's, did not present much better. Now, one very small counterweight to this was an openly gay character on the hilarious sitcom Soap. So all this to say, when I was 18, I wanted to get one of my ears pierced. Now, this was in the day before everybody had everything pierced. So it's actually meaningful. Not to say that people who are piercing whatever isn't meaningful, but just to say back in the day, you know. So I floated the idea one night at dinner to my parents, absolutely dead set against it, because a pierced ear on a man signified a gay man, a homo. So I tried to explain the best I could that the right ear meant that you were gay, but the left ear just meant that you were a guy with a left ear pierced. At least that's what the code used to be back when I was a teenager. But true to being a bull-headed man-child, one night at that AC/DC bar called Mother's, my friend pierced my ear. The drinking age at the time in New York was 19. Our fake IDs were immaculate. We were hygienic enough to soak the blunt stud in a shot of vodka before he forced it through my lobe with this very satisfying pop sound. And note that we were teenage males, stupid enough to use a blunt stud rather than a piercing stud. Who knew? It's all new territory for us. So now the trick was that I had to keep my stud in my ear, and I had to keep moving it for about 2 weeks to allow the hole to close, spinning it regularly so it wouldn't seize up around the wound. So I kept up this stud spinning ritual successfully hidden from my parents for almost 2 weeks, until one day my younger brother told my parents that he wanted to get his ear pierced. Well, if Joseph can do it, why can't I? Joseph doesn't have his ear pierced. Yes, he does. So I heard my father's footsteps thunder up the stairs, and I knew that something was up. Now, he stormed into my bedroom without knocking, did a quick inspection of the ears, saw the glinting gold in my left ear, then slapped me across the face so hard that my head snapped back and my glasses flew across the room. "You are out of here," he bellowed, and he pointed at the door. Now, there is so much swirling around this incident that I will not unpack this morning, but suffice it to say that my father and I did not have the best of relationships at that point, and suffice it to say that my father thought that his cocksure, insufferable, and ear-pierced son was now a confirmed homosexual, and that was the last straw. And thus he did what many parents irrationally do to their homosexual children: kick them out of the place called home, the place where children should feel quote-unquote at home. And at home, of course, means being profoundly safe to be or become oneself. I'll say my family would have done a great job had they read just a base, and we all just read a basic primer on human psychology. Now, suffice this to say, over the course of the day, with my mother helping mediate, things cooled down and I was able to sleep that night at home. And a quick sidebar, That incident happened 40 years ago. If my father watched a replay on that historical situation today, he would no doubt frame it in different context, in his context, though he would be deeply ashamed of his behavior. And I believe that that shame is a sign of growth. On this issue, he has matured as a human being, as we all hopefully grow and change and mature. As that bumper sticker so effectively reminds us, if you can't change your mind, are you sure you still have one? So as I replay the incident in my mind, in my memory, I am appalled at my own arrogance, my own lack of respect, and my passive and not so passive aggression. And this one incident of an arrogant teenage boy getting slapped across the face by an irrational and angry father is a nearly invisible blip in the long and painful history of violence perpetrated against people who desire to love other people who happen to have the same genitals that they do. I have talked with other gay men, in UU congregations in the region who tell stories about being threatened and harassed and attacked because they were gay. That's the only reason. Because this man wanted to be with another man. These are horrible stories. They're terrible. They're true. And my guess is that those kind of stories exist within this congregation. Stories that are stark lessons of the kind of pain and prejudice we humans can rain down on other humans. And thank you, Kathy, for that song this morning from South Pacific, and go Rodgers and Hammerstein. And recently I met a man who was doing a long road trip around the country on a sort of pilgrimage. And one of his holy sites along the way was a place in Laramie, Wyoming, where Matthew Shepard, an openly gay man from the university, was kidnapped, robbed, pistol whipped, tied to a fence post, and left for dead. "Is there a memorial at the site?" I asked. "No. Apparently the town will not allow it. Though I found the GPS coordinates on the internet, lots and lots of people visit the site to pay their respects." Now let's pause here and use some of our precious breath to say aloud the first and founding principle of this religion. Unitarian Universalism affirms and promotes the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I like to point out that that principle actually says every person and not all people. Significant difference. The principle sees every person. It does not see a mass of people. And as in every person, no matter the consenting adult that they choose to love, which leads me to my family dinner table. My twin daughters are home from their first semester of college. And at the end of the meal, one of my daughters says, "You know, I've got something to tell you." My wife and I look at her. "Yes?" There was this long, long silence. "I don't know why this is so hard," she said. And finally, after her face turned about 14,000 different shades of red, she blurted out, I'm gay." "Honey, that's wonderful," we said. And then to make the point perfectly clear, I added, "Sweetheart, if I were a woman, I'd be a lesbian." Now, if that's true, actually. A few days later, I asked when she knew that she was gay. And she told a story about being in high school and making out in a hammock with a young man. And during the kissing session, she thought to herself, "Yep, I'm a lesbian." And so to begin the process of coming out, of revealing to her friends and her family and her community who she was, she was careful, she was deliberate, she took pride in the process. And when her first girlfriend visited her in Port Townsend for the summer, it was extremely important for my daughter to tell the home congregation, in her own words, in the sanctuary of Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It was pre-COVID. It was a packed sanctuary, standing room only, probably close to 150, 200 people there. And at that time in the service, when it was to introduce and welcome visitors, my daughter, who had seen this many, many times, she stood up, took the mic, and proudly said, so everyone could hear, I'd like to introduce to you my girlfriend, Brooke. She was beaming. Now, at coffee hour after the service, it's like every lesbian in attendance, most of whom were decades older than these two young lovers, made a special effort to find them in the crowd, to welcome them, to hug them, to beam love and acceptance onto them, to ensure that this public coming out was joyous and memorable. So thank you, Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, for recognizing the power of that moment for two young lovers and for throwing your arms wide open in your joyous welcome. And I would give you, this congregation, the invitation to do the same when one of your young people come out is profoundly important. And my daughter wanted to be seen for who she was, and she was seen big time. Now, later that summer, we were heading back home, back east to visit my parents, who were incredibly loving and doting grandparents. They're also politically conservative. They're on a steady drip of Fox News. And as devout Lutherans, they are perpetually bewildered about what Unitarian Universalism is. My mom is fond of asking why there are no crosses and no Bibles in our sanctuary. And color portraits of Republican presidents hang in my dad's office, gifts from the Republican National Committee for his generous donations. Many years ago, I suggested that they move to Port Townsend and be near their granddaughters, and their answer was telling. Left coast, not living on the left coast. So now, my daughter's coming out had a new wrinkle, how to tell grandma and how to tell grandpa. So she thought about it long and hard, and she asked my advice. And I told her that the news would likely take some time for them to digest and to process, and that telling them in person, in real time, over Klondike bars on the porch would probably be hard on everyone. So we talked it through and decided that the best course of action would be to write them a letter, an actual letter with an envelope and a stamp, in advance of the visit so that they could hold and read the letter, let them do some thinking and talking, and then reread the letter. And then reread the letter, to sleep on it, do some internet research and talk some more, reread the letter. And so my daughter went to work on her coming out letter, and she wrote down exactly what she wanted to say and how she wanted to say it, draft after draft to refine and clarify. And when she read her final draft aloud to me, just tears just streaming down my face, kind of like they want to do now. The message was gorgeous, completely authentic, and every word was hers. She started with her deep love for them. And then she told them proudly who she was. And she ended with her deep love for them and how she looked forward to seeing them soon. She mailed a letter, and I realized that she was the same age that I was when I got my face slap. Now, 2 weeks later, she and her twin daughter boarded a plane to go visit Grandma and Grandpa. My wife and I were going to fly out a few days later. My parents had not said a word about the letter, and we wondered whether it had even arrived. Now, you talk about an elephant in the room, except this elephant was rainbow colored, right? So the plane safely delivered my daughters to the airport in Erie, Pennsylvania, and waiting in baggage claim were grandma and grandpa. Hugs, kisses of welcome, baggage claimed, rolled to the car. And that rainbow elephant just wedged between everyone inside the car. And so before the 60-mile ride home, there was a ritual visit to the Cracker Barrel restaurant for lunch. Once seated, with food ordered, and the rainbow elephant there for everyone to feel, my father said, "Well, we got your letter." Now at this point, you are welcome to imagine my daughter's brave and strong and delicate and very gay heart. Will it shatter? Will it rejoice? Will it be wounded beyond repair? Honey, you're our granddaughter, and we love you, and we always will. Now, those sentences are worth repeating. Honey, you're our granddaughter, and we love you, and we always will. Now, that is the opposite of being slapped across the face and kicked out of the house. These are arms hugely opened wide. These are people. These are family communicating with one another, recognizing one another, seeing one another, and loving one another. And as for that rainbow-colored elephant, love made that creature happily vanish into a puff of smoke inside that Cracker Barrel.